I remember at one point, after he fired the second round, and I fired my second round, and I remember thinking, oh, this guy ain't moving, this guy ain't leaving. And then I remember telling myself, you're going to get shot, keep shooting. I remember telling myself that. You're going to get shot, just keep shooting, keep shooting. So then he fired a third, I fired a third, he fired a fourth. And as he's doing that, I'm the whole time I'm kind of trying to crouch down to get cover, which I later, you know, during the investigation looked underneath it as more concealment. I mean, fucking, right. You know, if I could have fired through the objects. It was just a tarp and some other shit, right?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, he's also taking that back foot and kind of trying to disappear too. And I'm kind of, you know, get cover.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the next catch-up episode. Well, I've been doing a lot of that lately. Here on Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Still in Southern California at the conference out here. Bringing you another past guest. One of the guys that... one of the episodes that I laughed more than most episodes I'm in. I'm pretty sure I had tears running out of the corners of my eyes from laughing so much. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to bring back Jamie McBride. Brothers, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Murph.
If you remember, Jamie's LAPD, been there forever. He's got so many family members on LAPD now. They have their own precinct out there somewhere. But what a legacy for your family. Your brother he's a retired cop. Both your daughters are cops.
He's a retired chief of police for San Bernardino. Two daughters, LAPD. Myself, obviously, I got a couple of people in corrections, but they're on the they're actually locked up.
Inmates.
That's another story for another day.
Yeah, one of these days we're gonna get Tony on here. She's a new mom.
Yeah,
she's got a lot of responsibility. So
made me a granddad. So makes me feel old.
Got five granddaughters. Don't talk to me about
that. I thought you have a couple of greats by now.
A couple of
great grandkids.
Okay, we're gonna call into this interview. That's now you see what I'm laughing about. If you go back and look at episode 162 that came out September 16th, 2024, so not that long ago, that was Jamie's full interview. we learned things about LAPD that probably didn't want to know, but had a good time, didn't we?
Yeah, it was good. Good time. Yeah.
I loved it. So Jamie is now on, what do you guys call the board that you're on for the police department?
The Los Angeles Police Protective League, which is basically the police union.
Mm-hmm. And they do that full time.
Yeah. So we're the only, there's nine directors for the union and I'm one of nine. And we're the only nine employees for the entire department that's considered to be what we call release time. So basically, I work under the union full time. And the reason why we're on the release time is so when I go in front of the media or I write articles or whatever I do and I call out the mayor, the chief, the governor, whoever, there's nothing that comes back on me, because I'm full release time. So there are some benefits to that and which helps us, continue down our path of trying to make our union stronger and better our membership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how they get you to come out of your shell. You're such a bashful person.
Yeah, well, what's funny is I think I might have mentioned it in the last interview. I had no desire to join the union. I never wanted to work an inside job. I was having a great time. I'm, doing my thing. It wasn't until the department came after me and my team. They relieved us of duty at one point, ordered us to abort ICE to terminate us. And once I beat that, then I came back. I'm like, I got to do something to protect myself. And I talked to somebody I knew that was a director and I ran for director and won. And since then, I've won three re-elections. So,
and how long was the term for?
3 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I'm on my fourth term in the, almost towards, about the middle of that term. I don't know if I'll make the whole term, to be honest with you. That's going to give me way over 35 years. And I wasn't planning to be here this long. So
you probably maxed out your retirement, right?
Oh, I maxed it out. Yeah. So I maxed it out. And now I'm on what they call DROP, Deferred Retirement Option Plan. So I'm on that. And then we can stay on that for up to another 5 years. That's not going to be me, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'll probably be out of here next year.
Yeah. Well, you got a grandbaby to go spoil now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I want to retire, too, is I can see some, the grandbabies as they come out and have fun. And
I've seen pictures of the little one. Very cute.
No, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little darker than me. You know, because Tony's Hispanic. My daughter, you know, she has Hispanic blood, and her husband's half. And I go, God, I got a little brown grandbaby now. You know, at least he won't get a sunburn like I did. So,
oh, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it's good.
Both my daughters are Colombian by birth. We adopted, and you know, I'm English Irish.
Oh,
if the sun's out, I get a sunburn.
Oh, dude,
I don't even have to go outside. I can sit in the house and get a sunburn.
That's just like me.
Yeah, they get a suntan. I love it. Yeah. I'm jealous. That's the truth.
Yeah. Hey, so I got to clarify something.
All right.
So the last time we had the interview, you asked me about Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's really my half brother.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no, you know, I got a lot of heat for that.
From?
Well, let's just say we try to keep family matters private. And so I got a lot of heat about that. Uh-huh. So that's all I'll say about that. So not to get too involved into it, but you know, I try to keep lives separate. Because, you know, obviously, you know, Tony's high profile. I'm high profile because of the all the media I do and stuff like that. And some people, that's not good for their careers. But we'll leave it at that. But maybe one day we can sit down and actually iron this whole thing out.
Yeah, well, I'm going to think that we just found out the truth here.
So, but anyways, we'll work on Tony getting on here on your show first.
So now that you've owned up to that, the movie, what was it, End to Watch?
End to Watch, yeah.
So I was telling you, when I was, I critiqued that movie.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Gyllenhaal and was it Michael Pena, I think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The two partners. And when I was doing the research on IMDb, it says that it's loosely based on your life.
Right, right. Like, there's a lot of similarities to what happened in that movie to what happened with us. Of course, what ours was the 30 Pyrus, not the Hispanic gang. You know, and we got in a shootout. You know, I got shot in the hand, but it wasn't like anything crazy. And I've read the same thing too, but I never got approached about it, never got any royalties over it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why I didn't get approached about it, because I don't want to give up any money. But so, I mean, I've read the same things you've read too, and people come up to me. So that's all I know as far as that goes. But
well, you know, and I mean, this is giving me hope, because this means people are listening to the Game of Crimes.
Yeah. Then you find out a little bit. It's kind of like Kiss. Remember that, you know, the rock band Kiss?
Yeah.
Right? Nobody knew what they looked like. There's mystery. And then they started revealing their face. You had to put one piece of the puzzle together at a time. You remember that in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
So we used to do that when I was a kid. Just like your show here now. You get a little bit now, a little bit later. Pretty soon you'll have all the pieces of the puzzle.
I need to bring you on board. Yeah,
so, well, you need to bring me on when I retire so I can tell some real stories.
Oh, yeah. Well, so we will keep that in mind, and you will be a future guest.
Because I'm still active, so I can't tell all the stories.
Understood. So, but you just brought up something, and we just can't let this pass by. You got shot in the hand. That's no big deal.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It was funny. So we were working at 30 Pyrus pretty hard. And, you know, we were hitting all their stash pads and getting a lot of dope off of them. This is in Newton Division.
Mm-hmm. Shooting Newton, right?
Yeah. I think this is probably towards the later of the 90s. And, so we're hitting a lot of pads and I don't know if it was a setup. I mean, it was just real awkward, but I remember it was, New Year's Eve, and it was getting close to midnight, and it was by the station. And we see this car, they obviously see us, and they go right through a stop sign. So we just get behind them to light them up. Next thing you know, the pursuit's on. It's about two streets north of the station. And next thing you know, the door opens up, and the passenger leans out, and he's firing rounds at us.
With what?
A handgun.
Okay.
Handgun. And when they come to the intersection of Central, I think they must have been on like 32nd Street or something like that. The guy jumps out, lands, jumps back up to point the gun as the car's taken off, but he has a slide lock. So I'm trying to angle the car for my partner. I'm like, I'm just waiting for the round start blasting. And the guy tossed the gun, took off. We ended up catching him. And he turned out to be a 30 Pyru. So we're kind of putting it together. Like, oh, that's kind of odd. You know, 30 Pyru. So we're still taking down a lot of their players. And then we got some information about a pad selling dope. So we ended up in the back alley. So just so you know, in South Central, there's dirt alleys that run behind the houses,
mm-hmm.
and also, you know, north and south, right?
Okay.
So we ended up parking our car in the shadow of the night, you know, kind of walking up, and we encounter one guy as he's coming out, and he dropped a bunch of dope. So my partner grabs him and pushes him forward, and we go in there, and it was kind of like Sanford and Son. You know, the backyard is just everywhere with blue tarps all over it. And
some of our listeners don't know who Sanford and Son
is. Yeah, I'm trying to date myself. So he looks around my partner grabs him and pushes him forward. You know, we can only walk about 5 or 6 feet in because of all the shit in the backyard. And he looks around the corner, which would be the walkway path they had carved out of this junk towards the house. My partner turned around and points to his eyes and points down there like, I see suspect, you know, coming there, right? And he kind of takes the suspect he has already in custody, moves off. So now it's my responsibility for this guy. So I'm always a smart ass. So I give him the okay sign, like, gotcha, buddy, you know, just because I was like, what, we did this all the time, right? And so I pull my gun out and I do a quick peek, like, oh, here he comes. But it was like a really quick peek. I remember seeing this guy just like looking around. He's probably looking for his homeboy that we just caught. So I duck down, I crouch down, and as soon as he gets to where I'm at, I jump up to grab him. And as soon as he saw me, I see how his eyes light up, like, obviously I surprised him, right? And he took a step back, and I see him bringing his arm up, and I look down, and it came in slow motion, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been in a couple shootings before, and only my very first shooting was in slow motion. All the rest were kind of real time, and this one was like really slow motion. And I looked down, and I saw like a Tech 9 type of weapon coming up.
Ooh.
Now, what people got to realize is, you know, it's not like the military, right? We have rules of engagement in mm-hmm. law enforcement, right? You have to see a threat, digest it, and respond. In the military, they know bad guys that way, point, shoot, and war, right? It's a little bit different.
Right.
But bad guys have no rules of engagement. Mm-hmm. They just shoot, right? So I remember looking down, and by the time it registered, as it's coming up that it's a gun, I saw the explosion, you know? And I think that's the round that hit me. I had one of those little tiny flashlights in my hand. I think that round hit me.
Where at in the hand?
It just hit my finger, actually. It went down to the bone. So I got lucky. And so when he did that, he took his rear foot and pivoted. So now he's kind of at an angle now. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I'm crouching down. And I can't say too much. I'm still active right now. But I'll tell you the real story. Not the real story. I'll tell you another version when I retire. But let's just say the rounds are going back and forth, right? And I've been to the Sheriff's Academy before I joined LAPD, and during the Sheriff's Academy and LAPD, they're constantly telling you about the will to survive, mm-hmm. right? And they always tell you as long as you have air in your lungs to keep shooting, so you think about all that, right? So I remember thinking, I'm close to this guy. I would have been better off just slapping him in the face, telling him to go home. That's how close he was. So in slow motion, he fires around, I fire around, he fires around. And I remember thinking right away, because I've chased a lot of guys with guns. And a lot of times they want to distance themselves from a gun as fast as they can. So they dump it and they fall ass.
Yeah.
It's the ones that hold on to it that you're like, okay, this guy want to play. What's going on with this guy, right? So I knew I surprised this guy. And I thought to myself, it's funny how this thing probably happens so quick, but it slowed down so much and what you can think about. And I remember thinking, as soon as he realizes I'm a cop, he's going to take off running. I don't know why, but that came to my head, mm-hmm. right? In between the rounds are going off. And so I remember at one point, after he fired the second round and I fired my second round. And I remember thinking, oh, this guy ain't moving. This guy ain't leaving. And then I remember telling myself, you're going to get shot. Keep shooting. I remember telling myself that if you're going to get shot, just keep shooting. So then he fired a third, I fired a third, he fired a fourth. And as he's doing that, I'm the whole time I'm kind of trying to crouch down to get cover, which I later, during the investigation looked underneath it as more concealment. I mean, if I could have fired through the objects, it was just a tarp and some other shit, right?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, he's also taking that back foot and kind of trying to disappear too. And I'm kind of, get cover. So then after the fourth round from each of us, he's out of sight and I kind of go down. And then my partner, I found out later on, thought I was shot, right?
Right.
And so he kind of goes around me and he peeks around the corner. And now I'm watching him. And then he looks and all of a sudden we hear more shooting. Boom, boom, boom. And he comes around and he's shooting back. Bap, bap, and it's kind of like a movie, right? Turns out that it was the second suspect.
Oh.
So right away, I turned around to make sure they couldn't come back behind us, mm-hmm. and they couldn't. So then I did myself a quick pat down because I go, I got to be shot somewhere. That's when I saw a bunch of blood on my hand. I was like, okay, that's nothing. So then And of course, then the help call comes out and everybody comes out and their mother and stuff. And they turn out to be, 30 Pyru too. So there's all these 30 Pyrus and all these investigations. That's why a lot of people are saying that they think it was based on our stuff but they just used a different gang. Mm-hmm. Cause we did successfully damage their sales operation for a while. But of course they're back up and running like anybody else. They're like roaches. You can't keep them down. So, but that was that. But it's funny because I used to use that this line in court all the time, right? So I'd be in court testifying against some gangster or whatever like that, and whatever it might be. And whenever a defense attorney's like, "Well, how come you did that?" I said, "Because I've already been shot once, and I don't want to get shot twice." Now they never asked me where I got shot, right? But if they ever did, I said, "Well, it was my finger." They're like, "Well, it's just a finger," and I was ready for a comeback. I was like, "Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you that it wasn't my head." But they never went there. But I did use that line quite a bit in court. I've been shot once. I don't want to get shot twice. And they never follow up.
Oh, no, because you just won the jury.
Yeah. It still worked great. You know what I mean? So, but I've always used that.
Well, I'm telling you what, you shoot me in the finger. I'll be laying on the ground in fetal position crying. Where's my mom? Sucking my thumb.
But, it was funny because I was like, hey, at least I have my digit still. Yeah. I know a Newton cop right now who's in a gun battle who lost his digit in a gun battle. Yeah. We were just talking about that shootout this morning. We're talking about some stuff in Newton Division.
Yeah.
And we brought that caper up. That was in the mid 90s. And the guy was a great guy. Two crash guys got ambushed and they got shot. And, the interesting story about that, I was working Central at the time. This was got to be like 92, 93. And just a real side story. So this is back when we had crash, right?
Not
now it's such a bad word on LAPD. You can't use the word crash, but we had two Newton crash guys. And the way it worked was when you go to a gang unit like crash or even the gang units now, and you come in, they say, okay, Murph, your responsibility are these gangs and you need to be an expert of these gangs. And then when somebody else comes in, they're an expert of those gangs. That's how you get to know everybody. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the, these guys, it was, Ray Mendoza and Jerry Ballesteros, two good gang cops. And, they were responsible for the Five Deuce, Crips. And they're off of like 52nd Street and Broadway and Newton Division. And they already had one suspect in the backseat of their car. Well, back then we didn't have cages in our car like we do now, like most police departments. We had no cages. Plus they were driving in a plane wrap car. It's like a detective car. You just call them crash cars. Uh-huh. And they had a very distinctive color to their car. So that one officer was sitting directly behind his partner who was driving. And the suspect he had was to the right of him. And they decided on the way back to station, hey, just cruise by Five Deuce Hood. Let's just see what's going on. Well, they go down the one street and there just happened to be a lot of gangsters on both sides of the street. It was an ambush. And they already made up their mind that when they saw them again, because they're always for them, they're going to shoot them up. So they end up in this hellhole situation, and they're just getting rounds left and right. And Ray got shot, I think like four times, lost a digit in his finger to the point to where it shot his finger off, dented his Beretta. So once he went to slide lock, he couldn't get the magazine out. Mm-hmm. And the suspect next to him got shot. But anyways, we were just talking about that. And Ray lost his finger in that. They tried to pension him off from what I heard. And he ended up staying on and having a successful career and retired as a sergeant down the road. But again, another Newton caper, two great Newton cops and, doing their thing.
What a horrible situation. Talking about an ambush.
Oh, yeah.
And what I was looking for here as you were talking is we had I can't remember his name. I can't find him on my list of prior guests here. He was a captain out there. And I think that's when crash – well, I'm not sure it was Newton, but it was when crash started having some issues.
Okay.
I think there's some guy that went corrupt or was
– Oh, yeah. So it was Rampart Crash is what it was.
That's what it did.
Right.
Yep.
It was Rampart Crash. And you know what pisses me off? So just so people understand, I got hired in 1990. During that time, it was a massive, massive hiring push. And they wanted to recruit over 1,000 officers that year, which is a lot.
Wow.
And unfortunately, when they do that, sometimes they
– Standards. You can't keep up standards.
Well, the standards, that's why I got hired. But no, but they
– How we knew that?
No, but that's the year that we got David Mack, who turned out to be a bank robber. Remember, he robbed the bank.
Yeah.
We had Kevin Gaines. who was tied in with Suge Knight, who got shot by one of our undercover cops, mm-hmm. if you remember that. And we also had Rafael Perez, who was part of the Rampart crash scandal, right? Yep, yep. And all those guys were all tight, okay? But the Rampart crash scandal, which is you were referring to, it was just two guys. But the media blew it up to making it sound like it was the whole unit.
And of course they did.
Right. And I knew a lot of those guys, and they're great coppers. And they went through hell. Yeah. And Bernard Parks at the time was our chief, and he made it clear to everybody that he wanted anybody associated with the Rampart crash terminated. And luckily, we had some very good captains that sat on these boards of rights and found officers not guilty. And they paid for it with their career, which stunted their promotions, but they actually had standards, which was great. But a lot of guys went through hell on that. But it turned out to just be two people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all it was.
And that's what drags down an entire agency. How many sworn officers LAPD has?
Well, we're down right now, but we have about 8,700.
If you got a full complement, how many would you have?
10,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We lost a lot of people and recruitment sucks because of 2020. To be honest with you, I tell everybody, you know, during my career, the 2020 anti-police, defund the police movement was the worst I've ever seen. And I've been through the 92 riots, the Rodney King riots. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been through all that. I've been through, you know, don't squeeze the juice, you know, the O.J. Simpson. I've been through the Rampart crash and stuff. And this was the worst, the 2020. And I really think it's because, first of all, the politicians, right? But also social media. Yep. And the way that stuff gets out now.
Right.
And is...
truth be damned.
Yeah. And you know what? All it takes is a false narrative. And once that goes, it goes like wildfire. And I think that was a downfall. So right now, when I came on, we had what we considered a small class. And it was 60 people. And most of the time, it was 120, 130 a class.
Wow.
But the same year I came on, you know, 1990, we'd have... two classes a month of over 100 something plus. I mean, we're just packing people in there. Now we'd be lucky to scrape 32 people in a class. And then you have about five or six of those people who are outside agencies just going through our academy.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult. And then now the people that we get, there's people that wash out because they're fat and worthless. They shouldn't have been hired in the first place. Yep. Couldn't do the physical part. Or we had people say, oh, I don't want to carry a gun. What do you think? What job? You know, this ain't the Salvation Army. You know what I mean? You're not going to ring a bell. You're going to be out there doing crime fighting. Right. So I think the quality or lack of quality of recruits that we're getting aren't the best. I think we need to go back and really recruit heavy from the military. Mm-hmm. And we need to actually go out there and instead of, I don't, for LAPD, I can only speak for LAPD. I can't speak for other agencies. The city of Los Angeles does a horrible job of recruiting people. And they're doing this big push. Now, mind you, I have two daughters that are LAPD.
Yep.
But they're doing a big push of 30 for 30, which means they want 30% of our department to be female by the year 2030. It's called 30-30. So, and no fault to this person, but they hired somebody who went through the academy, successfully graduated, who was 4'9". If you Google dwarf, it's 4'10".
Wow.
Okay. Now I'm not faulting this individual,
right.
But is that fair to other officers who may be in a situation where they need help and this officer is unable to give that help? Right. So I think we need to go back to recruiting qualified candidates that can actually do the job, you know, and stop lowering standards, especially the physical part. You know, I know before, if you were a motor cop, you had to part of the qualification was if you dumped your bike, you have to be able to pick it up by yourself. Mm-hmm. Now they have the buddy system, you know.
So what's your buddy's got to lay his bike down with you?
No, two, you can pick it up now.
Right.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it's again, things are changing. You know, in law enforcement, and I don't think it's for the better. As far as my department, can't say for any other department. I just think that, you know, when I go to every, as a union director, I go to every academy class that starts to talk to them about the union. And I always ask, are there any military here? Because before it used to be a good majority.
Yep.
Because that's where because we're supposed to be quasi-military. And you get like one.
No kidding.
Maybe two. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, even at the DEA Academy, there's supposed to be 50 trainees per class.
Yeah.
And they bring Javier and I up to speak to all the classes. Now we go to the Academy twice a year And they're lucky if they're getting 33 in a class.
I don't get, and we have a great profession, mm-hmm. you know, the law enforcement. People don't understand, you know, I tell people in these recruit classes, and I still recruit people. Remember, I have two daughters, basically, right. you know, and I still recruit people to come on this department or in law enforcement because it is a great profession. And I try to explain to them, it's a pension job. Mm-hmm. That's called forever money. I said, you know, you can put away for these, you know, these are what are they called
401ks.
401ks and everything else. But you might have another Enron where people lose everything. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
And, I go, this is forever money. And you know, I talk to some people that do the honor guard and they do it for the retirees. They tell me, dude, we've been having some deaths from people in their 90s, 99. They collect a pension all the way up until then.
Wow.
That 401k would have been long gone.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, long gone.
Burn right through that.
Right. So it's a great profession, great insurance. And realistically, most departments are on compressed work schedules, mm-hmm. like 312s. Yep. Right. So you work 3 days a week if you're in patrol.
Yeah.
And 4 other days you can go to strip joints or something. You know what I mean? So there are some advantages to being in law enforcement.
So when you pull a pin other than grandchildren, yeah. tell us about that shirt you got on there.
So I have the House of Bamboo, Tiki Bar. So I'm involved in this bar. It should be open by the end of summer this year.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. So
in LA,
in Ventura County.
Okay.
Yeah, Ventura County. LA is too difficult to deal with the city.
Understood.
You don't want to. I don't want to give any money to the city of Los Angeles.
So, you want them to give money to you?
You're going to give money to me, right? But yeah, but otherwise, things are good. Got a movie coming out in January, so make sure you watch it. It's called Mercy with Chris Pratt.
Really? Is yeah. he playing you?
No. I'm in it with him. So check that out. That's supposed to be out in January. Chris plays a. Robbery homicide detective, and it's a little bit of futuristic, like maybe 10 years down the road where AI is really involved now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
not RoboCop. Okay.
I'll leave it at that. So you guys can go spend your money so I can get the residual check. Cause
there
I need
you
it. I want you guys to go out there and pay the money so I get that check that comes in. But so that's coming out in January. So
and what's the name of it again?
Mercy. Yeah.
Very good.
Should
man.
Be pretty
that's,
good.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so it should be pretty fun. But other than that, you know, I'm just waiting to pull the pin next year, fade off in the sunset, and let all these youngsters, you know,
take
the lead and pay for my pension.
Brother, I tell you what, man, it's just like last time. It's a hoot to talk to you. And for those of you that listened to George Christie's interview that we did here, I don't know, it was after your interview.
Yeah.
Jamie's the one that actually made the connection for me. It was recommended by Mel and Santi, but you made the phone call for me. So I appreciate that, man.
Well, and just so they know, you never know unless you ask, right?
Yeah.
So just to let you know how that connection worked. I was doing a symposium in Los Angeles. I was just going to start doing it to raise money for our Officer Needs Help Fund. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I'm going to do an outlaw motorcycle symposium. So I reached out to John Carr and Kaz, who worked for ATF, and they mm-hmm. also infiltrated the Mongols. And I said, hey, would you guys do a 4-hour block for me? They're like, absolutely. You know, they're great, great guys. And then I grew up in Ventura, one of the areas I grew up in, and I have like 40 mutual friends with George Christie, mm-hmm. you know, and George Christie was a Southern California chapter president for, he was in the Hell's Angels.
35 years.
Yeah, 35 years in the Hell's Angels for 40 years.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? Let me just – and I just saw him do a 5-part episode or thing on the History Channel once he retired from the Hell's Angels. So I'm mm-hmm. like, no, let me reach out to him. So I sent him a Facebook message. And I'm like, hey, George, it's my name, who I am, whatever. And I talked to him. I say, hey, would you be willing to come and talk to you know this symposium? He goes, yeah, here's my number. Give me a call.
Wow.
And that's how it started. And and he came out here, and then I sent him off to come down here to San Diego to do this conference here for Mel. Mm-hmm. And then I sent him off to East Coast to do a couple more down there. So, you know, it's just educational for the law enforcement officers. So
it is. And it's educational for the listeners of Game of Crimes. And when I called George, no hesitation whatsoever. And for those of you that listen to it, I mean, he's very intelligent. He's very well spoken.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, street lingo. That's all we're talking about, where I didn't understand a word. I've never worked gangs. So
no.
If they use their lingo, yeah. I'm not going to understand them. It was actually an impressive interview. I was a little shocked. The one of the last questions I asked him, I said, George, you know, given life now, and you could go back and do things over. You lost a son to the HAs. what would you do over again? What would you change? He thought about it and he said, not a damn thing, Murph.
Yeah.
Well, do I agree with that? Not particularly, but hey, it's his standards and he lived up to his own standards and he's being loyal to the end.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's very intelligent.
He is.
And so, you know, where Sonny Barger was more of the, you know, I'm a, you know, break skulls and all this stuff. You know, George, I'm sure he did that, but he's very tactful, very smart. In fact, growing up, they had legit businesses in town. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was to launder money, but, it, you know, in town. And so he's not a dumb guy. He's very smart.
Right.
And like you said, when you talk to him, he's very engaging. And so I know when he comes on and he does these symposiums and probably I didn't listen to it, but I'm sure when he did your show, he's not going to tell you where the body's buried because he's intelligent.
Right.
Right. But, it, you know, it's still entertaining. It gets a peek behind the curtain.
That's exactly what it's meant to do.
And I think it's educational regardless. So whether or not he says, yeah, you know, I did this, I did that. Well, of course, he's not going to say that because he's not stupid. Mm-hmm. Right. But again, I think any information is always good information for law enforcement.
Yep. It is. It's a learning experience. Jamie, thank you for coming back, brother. Now, when we're already telling the audience, when you retire, you got to come back a third time.
When I retire, I'll come back and tell some good stories.
And it's probably going to be longer than 2 hours.
It'll be entertaining. So,
all right, brother. Thank you once again, everybody. Thanks again for joining us here on Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Stand by. We got more episodes coming. Love for you to come back because I want you to continue playing the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all. The Game of Crimes. God bless you. See you soon.